Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of the world's best-selling sales book, The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And we're here today on Sell or Die to make sure that you get the information that you need in order to make more sales, more money, keep your job, fire your boss, and take over the company.
That's right. This show is all about you and how we can help you. And all you need to do is find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Tell both your friends.
And then give us a 5-star review.
Okay. And today's show is all about how you can improve your life. I want to make sure that you get that, because when we start to talk about what happens in the sales world, we mean it.
So let's get into it.
It's time to sell or die.
Above the old Berkman Plantation in Richmond County, Georgia, this flag identifies a sports mecca known around the world, the Augusta National Golf Club. Here each April come many thousands to see golf's master players play the great national course.
I was on the practice tee. I was with a client who's a really good friend of mine, and we were playing with a potential client of his. And we get out there, and I'm just, literally just in the locker room real quickly. I pull out my phone, Google this guy. He's a physician. You know, he's at University of Michigan now, or Michigan State now. He used to be at University of Michigan. There's a rivalry thing. I mean, he's been all over, very highly published, everything. And so we're going out. And so I meet him, and I'm just saying, it's really cool. I looked you up. You know, you've been up to some really good stuff. I saw what you published on and everything. And you know, just he said you did homework on me. I said, well, yeah. I just wanted to know who I was playing with. It didn't take me very long. You know, we just had our website redone. What did you think? I said, quite frankly, I thought you'd be taller. And he just about dropped his club and just started laughing. We hit like 3 more shots, and then we walked back to the cart, and he offered me a job. He said, I need people like you working for me. And I said, well, you know, I really appreciate the offer.
I can't cut and pay, right?
But immediately now from the first tee, we had a level of rapport that it would have taken me 6 or 7 holes to get, just in between shots and how do you this, whatever. Like, all because I spent 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes. And the cool thing was, he's an Indian guy and super nice guy. But in India, a lot of times their names, their first and last names, they mean something. So there's like a literal translation, right? So here is this studious academic professor who heads a radiology department, and his name means king teacher.
Oh, wow.
And so I brought that up to him one time. This was the second round of golf we played. And I said, so yeah, he's like, and every time I would just bring this thing up, and he would just say, are you serious? Like, you did that again? I'm like, I'm thinking it takes me 30 seconds. He thinks I'm amazing.
To me, the most major thing of playing golf, playing business golf, is you reveal who you really are as a person and what it's going to be like to do business with you by the way you play golf. So the guy's making a value judgment. Do I like this person enough to do business with them? Do I trust this person enough to do business with them? And this is my impact statement that I've made when I talk about golf. The person you're playing with, or the people you're playing with, will never remember the score of the round unless they had a hole in one or they had the best round they've ever shot.
Right.
But they will always remember that you cheated on the third hole.
No question. You used a foot wedge out of the woods. You improved your line of fairway.
Anything. Whether you put me down for a 7, but you know you had a 9. That kind of thing.
Right.
So it just tells me that the person is looking to cut something, take a shortcut, not play by the rules. And that's how they're going to do business with me.
There are so many metaphors.
They're going to substitute something. They're going to call up and say, they're going to lie to me about how it was delayed. Whatever the deal is, it is impactful to a point of, I'm not going to return your call.
There's a couple of different things at work there. One, you're talking about spending 4 to 5 hours with somebody, which is an incredible length of time. Now, that can be awkward for some people if you're just getting to know somebody, but think about how much time you spend with someone and how much you can learn in that time. The other
Especially
thing is,
if you don't like them.
Oh, right. The other thing is,
or worse, if they don't like you.
But golf itself is trumped and marketed as a game of integrity. Yeah. So now all of a sudden you've got a high bar. You learn a lot more about someone playing golf with them than you do playing poker or something else where you're actually
without a doubt. However, the challenge that you want to find out right away is, has this person ever played as a member of a country club or not? Because okay. that tells you everything about that person's understanding of the rules of golf, the etiquette of golf. You know, I think that I've given you this before. You know, when I gave my talk about golf, there's a couple hundred people in the room. And I said, how many of you grew up in a country club?
Right.
I raised my hand and two other people out of 200.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that's why you change your shoes in the parking lot.
Right.
You don't change your shoes in the parking lot. You go in the clubhouse because it's civilized.
That's right.
It's civilized. It's not like you're playing a pickup game of basketball or you're playing softball. You know, in the C League, you're playing golf, and golf has a century of tradition about how it's played, where it's played, what the rules are, raking the trap, not walking up the trap, letting people play through, shouting four. You know, there's stuff that you do that's normal in golf that if you didn't grow up in a country club, you might not know the rules.
Right. It's stuff like the reason that you wear a collared shirt.
Right.
If you're a man,
exactly.
you remove your hat when you walk into the clubhouse.
Right.
You wear a golf
suit, not sneakers.
Right. Right. And I mean, there's some of that stuff comes off as stuffy, and sometimes it can be taken too far. There's no question about that. But when you think about it, it demonstrates a level of respect and a level of just, I've been there before, that I think makes a really, really good impression in front of somebody. When you know when to let someone play through, when you know when it's your turn,
yeah.
when you know when to stop yeah. looking for your ball or yeah. whatever.
Who has honors is a big thing in golf.
It is. It is. And when you have the wherewithal to maybe at the first tee, you say, okay, look, we're playing ready golf, right? I mean, do we have 6 hours to do this? Look, if I'm ready, I'm going to hit my ball while you're looking for yours so that when we find yours, you can just play and we can move up. I mean, there are a lot of changes to the etiquette and the rules that have made it a little bit more modern while still keeping an eye toward respecting the tradition from where they came from. And that's what I think is so cool about it.
When you're playing in a foursome, do you play best ball?
Very rarely.
In other words, everyone's playing for their own score?
Yeah, typically. We switch it up with some events. I put together a couple of trips every year, and we're going to play some alternate shot and some different games this year just to speed things up and make it a little more fun. And you know what? I mean, the fourth round of the weekend, you know,
you're pooped.
You wake up. It's the last round of the day. It's one of the shorter, easier courses. We're going to go out and we're going to, you know, have some fun. We're going to do things a little differently, shake it up. And you can do that.
Yes, the practice tees are popular, often in use and always with fans watching. And also popular is the huge putting green out near the first tee. This is where the pros get the last chance for practice before being called to the first tee.
There are so many metaphors and so many comparisons between the game of golf and sales or business of any kind. You know,
right.
I was on the putting green the other day.
However, in sales, you don't get mulligans.
No. You know what they call a mulligan in Scotland?
What?
Hitting three.
That's classic.
I was on the putting green the other day, and, you know, it's one of those things where I hit a couple bad lag putts and left myself a little bit too long to come in. And I thought to myself, you know what? If you can make 6-footers all day, then you don't need to be a good lag putter. But you know how hard it is to make 6-footers all day? Because that's where the pressure And that's where the rubber meets the road and the pressure comes in. And think about that as it comes to sales. Think about that as your sales process leading up to it. That lag putt is you doing all your prep work, all your homework, knowing you're delivering the right message. If you can do all that stuff right, the sale will almost close itself. If you can roll that 30-footer up to 6 inches, nobody even makes you putt it.
Exactly. And otherwise, pardon my pun, you're a lagger.
Right. So don't be a lagger and don't be a putz.
Right, exactly. Don't be a lagger, don't be a putz.
Now, Big Arnold Palmer. He was the winner here in 1958, runner-up a year ago, and he's the heavy favorite for the 60 tournament. He checks all the points before he hits this first tee shot here on opening day. He wants to make sure that everything is absolutely perfect. Apparently it is, and he's ready to go.
When I was growing up, I watched Arnold Palmer because I was in Arnie's Army. I freaking loved Arnold Palmer. My dad liked Arnold Palmer, but he also liked Julius Burrows because sure. He was a slow, intense player that always hit the ball in the middle of the fairway. Yeah. I hated Burrows. He played him slow. But Arnold Palmer was never short.
No.
They referred to him as a bold putter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the attitude that he took in business as well.
Yes.
He was a daring businessman, flew his own plane, did his own thing, had his own way, had his own company. He was my idol as a golfer growing up. Then Jack Nicklaus came along and he could beat Arnold Palmer, and that really pissed me off. I didn't like Nicklaus just for that.
You were not alone, by the way.
Yeah. But the challenge is for somebody like that, you respect everybody's ability. Because mm-hmm. He could win a tournament big time.
Yeah.
I mean, he still has the record for the most. You thought Tiger would eclipse it, but unfortunately he lied about sex.
Yeah.
And I would ask you, if you're watching this video, how many of you have lied about sex? Leave the guy alone. He's a golfer, or he was. He's trying to make a comeback so bad.
And I don't think, he just went back in for surgery again. I think he might very well be done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there are so many things. Golf just kind of provides that magnifying glass. Now, in Tiger's situation, it's because he was a celebrity, not because he was a golfer. He happened to be a celebrity who was a golfer, right? But, I mean, I think when you look at the metaphors between Arnold Palmer and the way he ran a business and grew a business and the way he played golf, they called him a swashbuckler, right? He was not afraid to take risks. And what happens is the more risks you take, the more often you have to find yourself digging out of some holes. But you get really good at getting out of those kind of situations. But you watched
Tiger Woods play early in his career, and mm-hmm. He could make shots that nobody else could even think of.
Oh, he's extremely talented.
You know, behind a tree, in a ditch. Okay. Yeah. But Arnold Palmer did the same kind of thing and decided not to become a celebrity, but rather to become a businessman.
An ambassador.
Ambassador for the game.
Yes.
But, you know, could hang with presidents, could play with anybody. I think that that Tiger could have gone that way.
He could have. Yes.
He took endorsements that he lost.
Right.
You know, I don't know whether you remember the Accenture thing. He was a spokesperson for Accenture.
I do.
And then the next thing you saw was an elephant on a surfboard. He's replaced pretty rapidly. But that was pretty stupid. I mean, they could have just let it go. You know what I mean? Dumb. Corporate people now are too scared of their own skin.
Man, is that the truth? You know, I learned some things. You know, when you take a look at the markets and you realize that if you promise 14 cents a share but deliver 13 cents a share in that quarter, you're going to get fired. But if you promise, if you promise 14 cents a share and you deliver 15 cents a share, your contract is extended, you get a bonus. If you promise 28 and only deliver 27, you're fired. Forget the fact that you actually deliver double the shareholder value. That's not what it is. It's about doing what you said. So now, in order to make sure that I can in order to make sure that I can over deliver, now I under promise, and now I just don't say anything and don't do anything.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to take a bunch of guys to Bandon Dunes, mm-hmm. where you've played. I've been there yes. so many times. It's arguably the most gorgeous golf course on the planet. The vistas, the way the courses have been built, the reputation of the place. You know, it's always in the top 10 places in the world, not yes. just in America. And they continue to construct and you know, expand the property. But these guys, when they get there, are going to be excited. The best thing you can do when they get there is have smoked salmon and a bottle of wine
yeah.
or a couple of beers, you know, and everybody gets like a pound of it.
Right.
They have amazing. You go to Chuck's Seafood in Richardson.
Okay.
You have the best smoked salmon in the world, and it's like 10 miles away from Bandon.
Okay.
Maybe 20. But you're flying. Are you flying into North Bend? Where do you fly
yeah.
into?
Yeah. Typically, okay, yeah. That's where I did last time. I mean, you can drive
you
there.
Fly into North Bend, you can go to Chuck's first.
Okay. On the way.
Yeah. Well, it's not on the way. It's kind of out of the way. But
okay.
there's a back road back there that you can get the Bandon Dunes from. I think when you hit the Bandon Dunes turnoff, it's about 20 miles from that point. But it's like over – the views are spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful, you know, place. You don't see the seashore. You see the seashore on the way to Richardson.
Okay.
But you don't see it on the way to Bandon Dunes until you okay. get there. Because you're like cutting through the woods.
Right.
Anyway, just get smoked salmon and have like the spread when they get there of
right.
perfect food. So they're already – they're in the mood and now they're in the groove.
Right.
You know, this is the food of the, and get crackers and whatever.
Sure.
But I'm telling you, I can taste that smoked salmon right now.
Oh.
It's off the chart. And this place, they buy it off of fishermen that come in off the boat. They smoke it the next day and they sell it the day after that.
Ugh.
I mean, it just doesn't get any better.
I'm hungry just thinking about it.
Exactly.
That's, you know, it's funny too, is that place, Bandon, has such a sense of place. You know,
yeah.
Now, when I was there, it was a few
the
years ago.
It's across the
oh.
Yeah, I know.
And you get there and, you know, I remember we were there, there were a group of 16 of us. And so we were there for, actually it was Masters weekend a few years ago. And we were just there. And, you know, you get done with your round, you have a beer, and when you're in Bandon, you have a local beer. You have an Oregon beer.
Right.
I came home 2 months later, and, well, I came home way before 2 months later. But 2 months later, I'm at home, and I grabbed a beer that, you know, off the shelf at the store that was from Oregon, and I opened it up, and I said, this beer tastes like my golf trip.
Right.
I said, this beer tastes like Oregon. I was telling my wife. She's just looking at me like I'm crazy, right? But I'm like, yeah. This tastes like Bandon. I can't even begin to explain it to you.
Exactly.
But there's just that sense of place that comes from it. And that's why I love it. You get there, it's remote. You might as well be on Mars, right? I mean, listen, there's it, – because you say Richardson is not on the way, but it's
yeah.
– nothing's on the way to Bandon.
Exactly.
So
if you're flying into – you know, there's some pretty cool places there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty familiar with the whole area because I've been there probably 20 times.
Yeah.
Maybe more. But the challenge when you're at a place like that is to not ridicule the fact that it's podunk.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of podunk, but there's billionaires flying to that place yeah. and play a little golf.
Because it's done the right way. It's done with golf in mind. There aren't any houses. There's nothing to be developed. It's rugged countryside right on the ocean. It's picturesque. It's the place you go, and you don't get cell phone service. You don't get busyness. You literally have to check out and be present in a place like that,
yeah.
which helps your golf game. It helps your sales game, because when you don't have the distractions and the noise, you can actually focus. You know, I think this trip to Bandon is as much about a workshop and developing your skills and really the networking of other executives that are in the same place for the same reason. It's definitely about golf, not at the expense of the work we're going to do. But the overarching theme, though, is that it's a bit of an executive retreat. You've got to step away from your daily life And Jeffrey, you've talked a lot and written a lot throughout your career about the importance of stopping. What's your attitude like? What is your mindset like? What are you doing to enhance that? What are you doing to cultivate that? This is one of those things that allows you to do that in an environment that's, you know, really conducive to it. And it's just amazing.
In the trophy room, there are many historic exhibits. Here one may see the set of clubs used by Bob Jones in winning the Grand Slam in his earlier conquest. Perhaps the most famous club in golfing history, the Jones putter. It's known wherever golfers play. This is Calamity Jane.
I think that if you look at the clubs themselves as part of the lesson, that you're a driver, or the irons that you have in your bag are specific to exactly where you need to go. You can't hit a 4-iron when you need a 9-iron because you'll go, you know, too far, or you'll leave it short if you use a wedge, and you should use the 7-iron because you think it might go over the green. Right. You always have to pick. I was always one club up.
Okay.
That's what I looked at. If I thought I needed a 9-iron, I'd take an 8-iron. And that way I may go over the green, but I'm not going to be disappointed that I'm 28 feet from the green.
Right.
Not that I'm some great golfer, but my choices when I was playing golf, I think were important. You have to choose the right club. Well, now they have devices where you can measure the amount of space that you are from the green. I mean, it's just totally different.
Well, it's another example of data in the process, right? I mean, you just have more information.
But when you're around the green and you fall into a trap, that's part of the process. How you get out of that determines, you know, the customer is just giving you this objection.
Yes.
In the sand trap. Okay, can you get out without swearing?
Yep.
Can you get out the right way? Are you going to rake it when you're done? Are you going to walk up the face of the trap and someone thinks you're a jackass?
Right.
You know, it's an incredible metaphor to be able to play the game and understand the game at a sales level.
You're in a bunker, short-sighted, with a downhill lie. You've got to get up and down to win the match. How are you going to do it? It's more than a game. It's about putting yourself mentally in situations that you're going to be everywhere in your life.
Yeah.
And it tests your character.
You can't take too much sand, and you can't take too little sand. I mean, it's you got to hit it right.
When the margin for error is this much.
Well, I think one of the coolest things about the sand trap, though, is you can't practice swing.
Right.
You know, you're either in or out.
Yep.
And I'd like to have a quarter for every time I never made it out of the trap.
Rule number one, get out of the trap. Don't get cute. Get out of the bunker.
Don't string too many swear words together when you...
Well, it's okay if it's under your breath and they can't hear you, Jeffrey. That part's all right.
But out on the golf course, guys are smoking cigars. They got a cooler beer. And I was never like that.
I'm not either. There's plenty of time to drink beer afterward. I'm here to play.
Exactly. And I'm not intense about it. I think I told you I used to go to garage sales and buy cheap clubs. And when I hit the ball in the water, I take a club out of my bag and throw it in the water after. Boy, he threw his club in the water. But it was a way of getting the frustration out. I was over it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then I could go to the, you know, I'm, as they say in Scotland, I was hitting three. that's pretty funny, by the way.
Yeah, it was, there are just so many, and I think the average person too, I mean, when you think about it, the average person thinks that golf is just a reason to go and drink a bunch of beer and smoke a bunch of cigars, and it's way too expensive to be doing that, right? Like...
That's true, but not everybody's an athlete. Not everybody cares about winning. Not everybody cares about, you know, whatever the game is. But
it's one thing to be casual about it. It's another thing when, you know, my wife will tell her friends that I'm going to play golf, and they're like, oh, great. Yeah, I mean, Jeff's probably going to come home stinking, drunk, and just, you know, he's useless for the rest of the day. And she's like, well, no, he actually goes and plays. And, like, I'm shocked at how many people are shocked that I don't drink much when I'm on the golf course. I may have a beer if it's nice. Like, okay, whatever. But it's not about, like, this is my reason. I'm going to go pay $80 to go somewhere to drink overpriced beer. Like, I have beer at my house. I don't need to go anywhere to do that.
Is that trophy behind you because you're a millennial and everybody got one, or is that trophy
something to you? That is a trophy that I'm actually quite proud of. So I put on one of the trips that I put together every year, we got a group of guys and we split into a team and we have kind of a Ryder Cup match or a mini Ryder Cup competition. And that trophy every year, the winning team gets their name engraved in it and everything. And we've been going close to 10 years with this. And so it's a bad day for me, Jeffrey, when you don't see that behind me, because when my team loses, one of my best golf buddies is the other captain every year. And when his team wins, he gets to put it in his office. And when my team wins, I get to put it in my office. So
what is the what goes in place of that trophy next year?
That trophy, make no mistake, that trophy stays right where it is. Okay, it gets removed once a year. I take it up north with me so we can all drink out of it after my team wins. And Steve, if you're watching, I'm coming after you again. But the it's just a really cool thing. I mean, to have a tradition like that, and you know, it's frustrating to lose. It feels great when you win. It adds a little bit of competition, but it brings us all together too, because at one point or another, everybody who's been on that trip, I'm pretty sure everybody who's been on that trip has his name engraved on that somewhere, because the teams are different.
Let me throw a couple things as we end this interview.
Sure.
Number one, if you're thinking about going golfing with Jeff Bajorek, don't think about it. Just write the check and go. That's thing number one. Because not only will you learn about golf and sales, you'll have a life lesson that you'll be able to carry with you literally forever. And number two, if you're a golfer and you're playing business golf, the best thing you can do is be yourself. Be your conservative self. Otherwise, you're going to look like a jackass. If the other guy drinks, don't. If the other guy smokes, don't. Look like you're serious about winning rather than serious about funning too much, because that's how they're going to view you as a person long after that golf match is over. Long after that round of golf, you literally have emblazoned your personality on the mind and the heart of the other guy. And I want you to be perceived as a good guy, not as not a good guy. Easier way to put it. Jackass. Let's see, good guy, jackass. Which one would you rather be?
The choice is pretty clear. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thanks for joining us on Sell or Die. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die.
And follow us on Twitter. I'm at Gittimer. On Facebook, I'm / Jeffrey Gittimer.
I'm at Jen in the New York Minute.
You follow me, you follow Jen. We tweet it, we Facebook it. You click it, you join it.
Thanks to our amazing guest today. Our producer is Doug Branson, and our technical director is Chris Hill. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.